Gather round, one and all, and listen to tales of excitement and adventure. Tales of daring heroes, savage monsters, and bards who just couldn't keep it in their pants. Tales of friendship, nobility, drunken foolishness, and unforgettable fun. These are tales of role-playing games, fair listeners, and this is Rollin' Bones. My name is Ryan Howard, and I shall be your guide. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard, your source for the best in RPG interviews. I am your host and King of the Boneheads, Ryan Howard, and tonight we are joined by a good friend of mine. He is the GM of the Star Trek Adventures campaign that I am playing in. He is also the host of the Star Trek Tribunal podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Mr. Sean Andrews.
Hey, hello, and good evening, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here talking with my friend Ryan.
Absolutely. We are glad to have you on the show. You are including, well, I don't know which of you is more up on your trek. I'm sure Elfie will chime in here, but between you and Elfie, you guys are the two foremost Trek aficionados in my life. So to talk about this game that we have enjoyed playing for a few months now, there's no one better to talk Trek on with you, especially since Elfie does not want to do the podcast.
Thank you. And B, it's just, I've been a big Star Trek fan we're getting close to 30-ish years, so 26, 27 years, something like that. And it's just one of those things. You mentioned my podcast, Star Trek Tribunal, which I really just started as an excuse to make my friends talk about Star Trek with me. And that's pretty much all it is. It's one of those things. I don't care if anyone ever even listens. It's okay. I got my friends and I made them talk about terrible episodes of Star Trek for an hour, hour and a half. Mm-hmm. That's really all I care about for it.
Absolutely. Well, Sean, we are going to start things off the same way we start every single episode. I've got these questions that I ask everyone. So, Sean, how did you get into RPGs?
RPGs is something that I've only recently gotten back into. But my first kind of foray was in the mid to late 90s, probably 97, 98, maybe a little later than that. I played a couple of text-only RPGs in AOL chat rooms, but they were Star Trek RPGs, mm-hmm. but they weren't system-based. They were more of storytelling RPGs. So, you know, we would just get everyone together in a chat room, be like, we had a captain, our navigators, all that, and we would just chat out the actions that we were doing. So some weeks we'd be fighting Klingon, some weeks we'd go on diplomatic missions, things like that. But as that kind of became not as fulfilling, I actually started running a Babylon 5 RPG that I basically created the systems for. It was pretty simple stuff, especially considering I was in high school at the time, didn't have time to put a lot of time into it. Yeah. But it was basically everyone just got to choose a race, and then each week would go by with, these are the actions everyone's taken this week, and I would just I'd crunch the numbers and be like, this person sent a fleet to this planet, and this person sent a fleet to that planet. But after I graduated high school and went to college, did not have time to do any of that stuff anymore. I actually got, before I ever played a pen and paper tabletop RPG, I got super into reading the Forgotten Realms D&D novels.
Gotcha.
Like all the R.A. Salvatore stuff. I've got everything that, all of the Dritz novels, the Catterly novels. I've got some Dragonlance stuff, a few things like that. And then, funnily enough, so that went on for probably about 10-ish years where I just didn't touch anything. I played a bunch of online stuff, EverQuest, WoW, all the, you know, all the touchstones, the regular stuff. But then the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons episode of Community aired. And I was in a group of friends that we all watched Community, and we were all super into it. And that episode aired, and we were like, well, that seems kind of like fun. And then maybe a month or two later, it was actually Valentine's Day. And it was the first Valentine's Day I'd been single in like 4 years. And I was just walking around at Barnes & Noble, and there was a 4th edition starter kit, the red box for 4th edition. And I went, you know what? If I'm going to be single on Valentine's Day, I'm going to do it right. And I bought myself the starter kit and just my little group of Community friends. Like I DM'd us like through a whole campaign, and most of those people, we all worked at a restaurant together and then sort of fell off when that restaurant closed. Like we all just kind of went our separate ways, because that's just what happens with those kind of food service industry jobs. And then probably about a year ago, after I'd been doing Star Trek Tribunal for about a year, I was like, I've decided I wanted to DM something. And 4th edition was pretty much completely on the way out for D&D, so that wasn't really going to be anything I was didn't think I'd get anyone interested in. And then I was like, well, I'm on a big Star Trek kick right now, so why don't I just buy the core book and just start DMing some Star Trek adventures? And that, so it's kind of an on and off thing. Oh, goodness. But yeah, that leads us up to pretty much when our first session was right before the pandemic broke out.
Yep.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, that, and then I went to a tribute to the late Neil Peart. Those were the last two like fun things I did before we all got locked in our homes.
Yeah, I did that, and I played one game of Magic EDH, the first game of Magic EDH I played in like 3 years, and that group has not gotten to meet in person since then either. It was like the day after we played Adventures for the first time, I think.
Gotcha. So, of all the games that you've played so far, you've alluded to a few that you really liked. What would you say your favorite game is?
Are we just talking pen and paper RPG stuff?
Yep.
Or,
yeah.
I don't think I've really played enough Star Trek Adventures to say it is yet, because it's kind of, and we'll get into this later, I'm sure, but the gameplay and like the idealism behind it is kind of very different than other pen and papers I've played. So I'd just go, you know, old school answer right now, D&D.
Gotcha. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So thinking back to either those early days of your role playing, or even if the answer's more recent, do you remember your first character, or if not, who is your most memorable character?
I didn't have too many player characters because I've usually been the master. But the very first, the story-based Star Trek RPG that I played, I had an AOL chat name, and my character's name was Typo. That was it. And every time that I got promoted, I would have to change my AOL AIM name. So I went from Ensign Typo to Lieutenant Typo to Lieutenant Commander Typo, all the way up to Admiral Typo.
Nice. Awesome. And I definitely feel you on the Forever GM thing. In fact, being in your game has been nice, because it's a game that I'm in that I'm not GMing.
Yeah, and that was one of the, I'd say, probably the bigger downside of the D&D that I played, was the fact that I was DMing, like, everything. Like, I was doing everything.
At some point, I will return the favor to you, and then I will GM in a game so that you get the chance to play. I feel that it's only fair.
Well, and we're much closer than we were pre-pandemic.
Yep. Yeah, I think when we first met, we lived about 45 minutes away, and now I'm about 20 minutes from you, maybe even a little bit less than that, so it works out pretty well as far
closer.
As gaming goes.
Yeah. As soon as people can go places again.
Absolutely. Now, being kind of the forever GM, a lot of us... Okay, I have to disrupt the flow here because Elfie made a funny. It's too bad you weren't in the Bajoran military so you could be major typo.
I saw that too, and I spaced on it after I saw it, but yeah, I was thinking the same thing. It was just, I don't think just to deflate the joke. I'm sorry, but we just weren't doing Bajoran stuff. It was like strictly Federation stuff. But I do recall there being like explicitly Klingon ships with the people who were like typing Klingon to each other and stuff like that.
Oh God. Chat. Yes, Bajor gets left out as usual, of course.
Yeah. Which, and I've recently done a Deep Space Nine rewatch, and Bajorans are great. They're probably the most fascinating culture in all of Star Trek.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. Elfie and I are. We have two episodes left of DS9, and this is my first watch through of it. And the Bajorans are definitely one of the more interesting race. I am very fond of the Klingons because I don't know. I just love that honor shit. But, you know, the Bajorans are definitely the linchpin of that series. Their interplay with Cardassia definitely holds that show together and creates a lot of interesting moments. And, yeah, I mean, as much as I love the Klingons, I do have to give it to you that the Bajorans are maybe even that much more interesting than them.
Yeah, and I see Elfie has said in chat, hashtag Cardassia forever.
Yep.
Which, Cardassians are great too. Maybe the best character in Star Trek history is Cardassian, so
yep.
You got that going for you, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, as a forever GM, a lot of us have this tendency to have these NPCs that travel with us from game to game. Do you have any like that you kind of bring with you everywhere you go? Any forever NPCs?
Not really. Just, I think, because I've been so spaced out when I've actually been DMing that I've not really had too many archetypes with that sort of thing. I bet if I sat and thought about it, I would come up with correlations between NPCs I created, but nothing particular stands out.
Gotcha. So the USS Blackburn will not be getting any orders from Admiral Typo anytime soon, I take it.
No. That was definitely a 14, 15-year-old kid's idea of what would be a funny name.
Absolutely. It's like my uncle has a license plate that says stolen tag. So I definitely feel you in that headspace there.
I heard a story about someone whose license plate said something like not found or error or something like that. And they ended up like practically getting arrested because it wasn't like when it was showing up in their system, like it was showing up as a null.
Yep. So when it comes to the times where you get to step behind the screen and you know, actually play, or even when you're behind the screen and GMing, how would you describe your playstyle both as a GM and a player?
As a player, I usually go very simple, very straightforward, barbarian, warrior, things like that. Just something that where all you have to do is just bash your head against it until it opens up. That's my favorite for pen and paper. That's my favorite, and I find that if I'm playing electronic WoW, those sorts of things, I tend to go squishy caster, that sort of thing. Gotcha. But yeah, I definitely like pen and paper. I like to not think about it and just go, I'm going to smash your face in, roll my die now. Well, that door's locked? Well, I'm going to kick it.
Gotcha. And then as a GM, I've seen a little bit of your style, but how would you describe what's your kind of GM go-to style is?
I like trying to present something that isn't just a straightforward combat. And I mentioned this already, but Star Trek Adventures, like, it definitely feels like it wants you to lean away from that. It's got okay combat systems, but it's something that it kind of wants to lean towards the more cerebral or outside the box. things like that, which is what I like putting together in my D&D campaign. And being a first time pen and paper DM, like I was trying to do things pretty early on. That was like, oh, well, this is a tower and each floor is a different puzzle or encounter that you have to deal with, rather than just, oh, well, on this floor, there's two orcs, on this floor, there's three orcs, and on this floor, you're never going to guess. It's four orcs.
Gotcha. So a lot of times, you know, people like us who come on shows like this and talk about these games that we play, we have a lot of good memories tied up in, gaming with our friends. So if you had to describe a fondest RPG memory, what would it be? And then I'll give you one other, since this is a Trek show. What's your fondest Trek memory?
For DMing, for the D&D sessions I was doing, and actually the tower I was just describing, one of the puzzles, and it was a group of completely new players. This was, you know, people who had never played before, but we were people that spent a ton of time together. It was, worked in a restaurant for together, all back of the house people, except for I think one of us was like a floater. But we so it's all new players, and the puzzle was literally just, there's a checkerboard pattern on the floor, don't step on the black checkers. And a friend of mine who was playing, he could not for the life of him figure that out. And he was just trying to bull his way through that. Like, he was just like, all right, well, I step forward. All right, you're fine. Okay, cool. I step forward again. You get hit by a dart. Why does this keep happening? And it was just one of those things where it was just, and I think this was probably our first, like, real first or second real session. So everyone was really finally starting to get in the feel and flow of it. And it was just one of those things where when they finally got through the room, I was like, Max, all you had to do was not step on the black tile. And he was just like, oh, I guess that makes sense. So that was that. For Star Trek, I've got a few different ones. I became a Star Trek fan in the summer of 95. So I guess it's right at 25 years. I guess I was over-exaggerating a little. Yeah. But I remember specifically because I rented Star Trek Generations.
Gotcha.
So that came out in November of 94, which means I would have rented it, because I rented it in the summer. And I watched that tape so many times. So that was Generations. So Next Gen was over when I started watching, and I started watching Deep Space Nine. But I went to see First Contact in theaters, and I went to go see Insurrection in theaters. And Insurrection, I went with a friend of mine, and it was a big deal release, like, for some reason, because it was 98. So, like, the I want to say it was kind of on the heels of the Star Wars special editions, but before the prequels. So in 98, and 98 is not a big movie year, I think, is right. Probably part of the issue there. Kind of shitting on Star Trek Insurrection right now, but but just the energy in that theater, and hanging out with my friend Matt, who was someone that I grew up with, like that I went to like elementary school with. And like, we were on the same little league teams together, and we went to school together and all this stuff. And just so many little things about that night stick in my head. And they did trivia up front. And it's one of those, you know, the little things that get stuck in your head from 10, 15 years ago. And you're like, well, I can't remember this super important thing.
Yeah.
But this is what sticks in my head. And they were giving out, they were just giving out action figures and this and that. And the question was, how many times through the course of Star Trek The Next Generation does Data cross-dress? And so You being a relatively new Star Trek fan, mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a chance to answer this question. And Elfie, you can put this in chat as well if you want. Mm-hmm. I want to see the answers, and then you get to hear my side of the story.
So we've watched Next Generation. We finished it a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's relatively fresh in my mind. I'm going to say 3.
Okay. Giving Elfie a chance to answer if she heard. I don't know if she did. Okay. She can't look it up.
She should be able to answer this. Let's see.
Okay, so.
Okay.
Elfie's answer. The Holosuite, A Fistful of Datas,
mm-hmm.
is an episode where there is a malfunction in the holodeck, and holodeck characters take the form of Data.
Yep.
And one of them is the Madam of the Brothel. That's not Data. That's a holodeck character. So I answered correctly, which is 0. But the trivia master said, oh, no, it's 1. And my friend Matt got it. Like, he was like, oh, it's 1. Because we knew if it was, they didn't take 0 as the answer. He said 1. But in the technical sense, which is the best kind of correct, as we all know,
yep,
it's 0 because that's not Data. That's a holodeck character that looks like Data.
Mm, absolutely.
Anyway, so that's probably my most fond memory. And the Data action figure that I think I might still have this. The Data action figure, it was the First Contact Data action figure still in the package. It was his prize. He gave it to me for Christmas.
Nice. Gotcha. Well, unfortunately, now that we've had kind of the highest high of talking about RPGs and Star Trek, we've got to bring it down a little bit.
Because
mm-hmm. sometimes we play with people who we just don't click with. Sometimes people behave rather badly at the table. And the worst of these people, we have reserved the term of that guy for. So in mm-hmm. your time playing, I know you've mostly played with friends. Have you experienced a that guy story that you're comfortable telling? And if it's me, it's okay.
It is not you. It's, again, the D&D group. It was just a case of someone having too much to drink and getting a little belligerent to the point of where he was throwing D20s at people, like hucking D20s at people real hard. And because it was one of those things where it was fun until that point.
Yeah.
Because he was playing a mage, and as anyone, and all he was doing was, all he could remember that he could do was magic missile. And we were having a grand melee tournament, and basically it would be like, all right, and it's your turn now, and he'd go, magic missile. And that was it. But he was also getting terrible. Elfie's question.
A default.
They're tough little bastards. They're hard. I'm talking like just across a kitchen table, like hucking it at someone, and it was very much like, all right, I think we're done for the night.
Yeah.
But so, you know, not like a that guy, but definitely a that time story.
I mean, the one thing that I remember in gaming with you, there was the session 0 where I believe you ate a whole gummy bear.
Mm-hmm. A special gummy bear.
And then tried to power through it.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, I had a great night.
It did end up being pretty fun. The only thing that kind of ended up being weird was, I immediately, being someone who loves the roleplay side of gaming and really gets into my characters, mm-hmm. immediately launch into, I am Lieutenant Bradford Terran, and I'm going to speak to you as if I am, and then the other people at the table were not feeling it.
And I couldn't stop giggling?
Yep.
Uh, It was a good gummy.
Space Lieutenant Scoot McHarry was having none of it.
Yeah. I can't believe she stuck with that as her name.
Absolutely. And something I noticed, this might be giving away too many details. I don't know if you guys realize this, but just down the street from where you live, there is a McNary Street. And
oh,
every time I pass it, I think of McHarry.
So, that name was chosen. There's an actor whose name is Scoot McNary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was it. And she would like, she was just like, "Nah, I'm gonna be Scoot McHarry." And okay, all right. That just shows us how seriously you're going to be taking this game, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, as long as everyone's having fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the last of these introductory questions before we dive right into this Star Trek RPG discussion, the answer to this question can be as philosophical or as sophomoric as you want it to be, Sean. If you mm-hmm. could put anything on a T-shirt, what would it be?
So this is the question I probably came most prepared for.
Okay.
Actually, so I believe that you're aware. I'm not 100% sure that you're aware. My girlfriend is an artist in a lot of different mediums.
I did not actually know that about her.
Okay. And she's prepping to open an Etsy store, so she has a bunch of stickers that she's already ordered and things like that. And one of the newest ones, these actually arrived today, and I giggle every time I see this. Let me make sure... let me know if it's focused.
Yep, it's focused.
That right there.
Absolutely. Yep. For the people who are going to be listening to this on audio, you've got a drawing of a cat.
Oh, yeah.
With, is that a piece of bread?
It is a French beret. It is a pink beret.
Gotcha.
And it says Le Chat.
Absolutely.
It's very, I love the simplicity and just the look on the cat's face. Mm-hmm. Like I can't look at this thing and not giggle.
Absolutely.
And she may be eavesdropping from the other room, but that's okay.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, now that we have the introduction out of the way, let's talk a little bit about Star Trek and its history with role playing. I did not know of any Star Trek role-playing games. I figured there had probably been one before this, but the first one I was aware of and ever actually tried out was the Modiphius Star Trek Adventures game. However,
yeah.
I have discovered that the history of Star Trek role-playing goes all the way back to pretty much the same time that D&D started, 1978.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me a whole lot, just based on 78 was back when Star Trek had kind of re-entered the zeitgeist post-Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
Because that's when they were planning Star Trek Phase 2, which was an aborted TV show that became the Star Trek movie series. Because it was going to be a new show, because it was a huge hit in syndication. So it doesn't surprise me that there was like a plethora of... merchandise and things like that were kind of rolled in to either roll out with the Phase 2 launch, or when they decided to do movies instead, roll out with the movies launch.
Mm-hmm. And this game, it's called Star Trek Adventure Gaming and the Final Frontier. It was put out by Heritage Models. It also came with a set of lead miniatures, so it was also the first line of Star Trek miniatures as well. But one thing to note about this game, it did not actually include space combat. It was purely a away team RPG.
And I can buy that. That's I think one of the bigger appeals, especially at the time. Like, there wasn't a lot of space combat in Star Trek, really, especially the original series, because it was very expensive and it was a very cheap show.
Yeah.
And so it completely makes sense that that would be the case. I'm sure that technical manuals and things were around, but I bet that they did not really take off until the next gen stuff.
Yep, and then the same guy that made that game went on to update it. This was an unofficial update,
mm-hmm.
Because the Paramount moved around the license. The guy's name is, oddly enough, Michael Scott, not that one.
Yeah.
But he updated it in 1982 to Starfleet Voyages. This time it did include space combat. And from there, official Star Trek games go to FASA Corporation for Star Trek the role-playing game, which is kind of the first major Star Trek RPG. And this is where a lot of people who are super into Star Trek role-playing kind of start.
Yeah, I think I had a classic Star Trek role-playing game, like little, not a core book, or like a little mini adventure book that was very, what sort of want to use, very limited, very sparse. Mm-hmm. And I think it's from that particular game. I'm not 100% sure on that, but just based on the age of it and the name that's on it, I had one, and it's got what you would expect from the era. Like, not a lot, but enough to really get playing. Mm-hmm. Sort of pulled my phone out. I was going to see if I could find it real quick.
But something that's interesting about this game, this was the Star Trek RPG for the entirety of the 80s. And it became one of those things where a lot of franchises, Star Wars does this, James Bond did this with their role-playing game. The RPGs, just to give you enough material to create your own adventures, by design, had to elaborate on the lore of Star Trek, and a lot of Star Trek fans who played these games began to see these additions as canon, and even their supplement on the Klingons ended up influencing Paramount itself.
Yeah, and I just double-checked it. Yeah, these were the game manuals that I had, were the FASA ones. Yeah, that's something, like little things like that pop up throughout Star Trek history with canon. Like, that's just one of the big sticking points for a lot of fans is canon stuff. Mm-hmm. But just little things like it's generally considered accurate that Spock was the first Vulcan in Starfleet. Mm-hmm. Which is not true, but there's like lots of little hints to it and things like that. But these rule books and lore books is where a lot of that came from.
Hmm. Yep. And then apparently at some point, Paramount got upset with the way they were handling the Next Generation license. They did two TNG supplements in 87 and 88. Actually 88 and 89 were when those came out. And Paramount pulled FASA's Star Trek license, which again caused an uproar in the fan community because TNG had already diverted so much from what this role-playing game had established in their minds as canon. And TNG was, from what I gather at the time, extremely controversial until probably about midway through its run, I'd say.
Yeah, that's generally the consensus, is that it was, and as any good Star Trek fan will tell you, even Next Gen wasn't even particularly good until the third or fourth season, so it was very easy for people just to kind of write it off and be like, well, that's not my Star Trek, which, you know, it's still a thing that you hear today with the new shows, and it's just, it's what's going to happen kind of every time something like that rolls out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then there were a couple other kind of knockoffs. There was a game called Prime Directive that showed up for GURPS 3rd Edition. It also got a D20 port. Again, not official, not actually affiliated with Paramount. They did release a Star Trek TNG role-playing game in 1998. They did supplements for TOS and DS9. They never got to do Voyager. That got canceled before they lost their license. And that one ran through the later part of the 90s.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know a lot about that one. Mm-hmm. But that makes the... There was a lot of Paramount jerking around with the license at the time in general, too. Yeah. So not surprised by that.
Mm-hmm. And the late 90s were an absolute glut of RPG products and splat books and stuff like that. So the fact that there were multiple Star Trek RPGs and expansions released during that time frame does not surprise me in the slightest.
Yeah, no, not at all. There was, not just in the RPG sector, like so many Star Trek just action figures and things like that. They were just pumping and pumping and pumping. And a lot of people consider around that time, late 90s, early 2000s, is when Star Trek fatigue really started to set in.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, at that time you had... multiple shows going, movies on a semi-regular release schedule, and then they never seem to stop pumping out video games as well.
Yeah, which they've definitely stopped now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's been a long time since we've had a decent Star Trek video game. Now, the last one to mention before we get into Star Trek Adventures, and I only mention this because one of the designers behind it is... famous YouTube GM Matt Colville, but Decipher Inc. did put out Star Trek role-playing game in 2002 using their CODA system. Seems to be pretty well regarded, but again, I don't have any experience with it.
More than likely what happened with that was Decipher went under as a company.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever talked about it on here. It's actually a super fascinating story about embezzlement and things like that. because I was a huge Decipher head. Mm-hmm. Like, I played their Star Wars and Star Trek card games. Mm-hmm. They had the Lord of the Rings card game. That was all that, like, in Star Wars prior to Pokemon was the only thing that came anywhere close to challenging Magic in terms of sales and things like that. And they retained the Star Trek license up until the company folded. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I will need to do a deep dive on Decipher then. Now that you've mentioned that, I think it would be safe to say expect a Decipher episode at some point. Because it sounds like there's a lot to talk about there.
Yeah, I can point you to some people that have some heavy, like, actual Decipher people to talk to for that.
Gotcha. Awesome. Well, that brings us to the most recent Star Trek game. This is still being actively supported, very well regarded amongst Trek fans and RPG fans alike. Let's see, what year did this game come out? I believe it was... Oh, this... apparently this came out in 2020.
Yeah, it's...
Or maybe 2019.
It's super recent.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like you said, it's still being supported because they just released their latest rules, the Klingon rule supplement.
Yep.
Like a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, something like that.
Yes, and this is, of course, Star Trek Adventures. And this right here that I have is the core rule book. This is really what you need just to get started. This is the player and GM stuff. And, Sean, I guess at this point I will turn it over to you to talk about your thoughts on it before we get into my thoughts a little bit.
Yeah. So what I like about Star Trek Adventures, and this is what I've touched on a little bit already, is and the rule book kind of spells this out, is this is designed to be as if you're playing as a Starfleet, like a Federation Starfleet crew, which means that you should be playing with the ideals and mentality of a Star Trek crew, like an idealistic Star Trek crew, which is really where the ability to put together something that's kind of tonally different from what you see from most RPGs. I mean, and Star Trek has the archetypal races, you know, Klingons are basically the orcs, and Romulans and Vulcans are essentially space elves, and this and that, Ferengi or goblins, all that here and there, or whatever your comparable race is for what other game you're playing. Mm-hmm. But it's they say it straight out in the rule book. Like, you should approach these things in the manner that a Star Trek Starfleet crew would, which is you shouldn't be shooting first. Mm-hmm. You should be asking questions. You should be exploring. You should be trying to do this with an open mind, which is, as I talked about earlier, as I'm trying to do in these first few sessions, because we're only on session five or six, something like that.
Yep.
So we're still, you know, everyone's still getting their legs underneath them. But I'm trying to put together situations where it's not just to shoot your way out of it. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely putting that as a consideration of, in case there are bullheaded people who might want to name their character Scoot McCary, that do decide that they just want to shoot their way out of a situation, but where you should be negotiating, you should be exploring, you should be, you know, scanning something, you should be, you know, trying to figure out how something ticks and research and using logic, general problem solving skills, mm-hmm. not just, again, my preferred way to play, which is let's just kick down this door and see what happens.
Yep.
Which is why, kind of why I'm not super disappointed that I'm not playing, mm-hmm. because that's my way to do it. But also the crew I created, I specifically made the captain and the first officer. The captain is a Vulcan, so everything should be that kind of cold, hard, logical way to deal with things. But I made the first officer a Klingon, so when I do have to step in, I'm just going to be this Klingon, potentially just be this Klingon who wants to shoot things and ask questions later.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And for the edification of everyone out there, I'm playing Lieutenant Bradford Terran. Is a security officer, is kind of how I built him. He's a yellow shirt. And I really did kind of design him to be the, when things get out of hand, he's the one you want to have by your side. My favorite characters in Star Trek are like Chief O'Brien and Worf, honestly, is up there. And then I also like mm-hmm. Odo. But I like the kind of get your hands dirty Star Trek characters, and so that's what I tried to do with Lieutenant Terran. I do try to not go for the phaser if I can avoid it, though, because I know that's really not the point of being a Starfleet officer. You're not gonna immediately go for the phaser. Even though I think I've fired my phaser more than anyone else on the crew.
You are still the security officer, though,
yes.
So there is that. Like, you're the one with the stats to handle that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned, it is a fresh group. Oh, you just got slammed in chat.
Oh, Elfie.
Oh,
I haven't seen Voyager, but
Eternal,
I know.
Or Ensign Harry Kim.
That's incredibly rude.
But oh man, that's too good. I kind of lost my train of thought. What I was saying is it's still a fresh group of people who've not really played any games together before specifically. Yep. And only I think one other person in the group other than you has actually like actively played in our like a regular pen and paper session.
Mm-hmm.
So it's people that are, you know, feeling out how to play. My aforementioned girlfriend Emily is playing. She's never played an RPG like this before, so she's still kind of feeling things out and determining, you know, how to actually. When I told her, I was like, "Well, you just do what you want to do."
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a little tough to wrap the brain around it, just because it's like, well. But how do I determine what I want to do? I was like, well, I don't know. What do you want to do? So yep. It's still, I think that's where some of that is coming from here, is everyone's still kind of fresh on it, figuring things out. Even me, like I said, this is me literally just picking a game because it was Star Trek and going, I want to play this. And then kind of reading through it and it's like, oh, this is a little different than anything I'm used to. But you know, I like Star Trek. I'm going to do this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And so far, I mean, I've got a couple praises and then I have a couple criticisms of the game as well. one thing that I really love, and you've already said this, but structurally, this game feels like you're playing an episode of Star Trek. It's very much designed to flow like a typical episode of a Star Trek TV show flows, and I'm guessing for a longer, more epic session, it'll probably end up going the way a Star Trek movie ends up going. One thing that I am learning to appreciate and kind of getting the hang of still is the actual system itself. It's an odd hybrid of a D20 system and a percentile system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a little strange, for sure.
I don't know if Modiphius does this with their other RPGs. I've not played any of their other games. I obviously will because they have the Dune license, and I'll be checking that game out in December when it comes out.
But, I might be interested in doing that with you.
Yeah.
I'm not a Dune head, mm-hmm. but I'm a Dune fan for sure.
Oh yeah. Dune is great. I'm still super excited for that movie.
Oh yeah, the pedigree in there is insane.
Oh yeah. But the system here, as we've alluded to, where a percentile system, you roll two D10s and you're trying to get under a target number. You're doing that here, but with D20s, which me with my lizard 5e brain, I'm looking for the high number on the D20, where that's mm-hmm. not at all what you want in this game.
Yeah, it's just for listener edification, essentially you have two sets of stats, your primary stats and then your secondary stats, and your checks are based on like security and command I got it right here, whatever they're called again.
Yeah, I've got my sheet here.
Yeah,
so I can reference this, like if Lieutenant Terran were going to fire his phaser in the event that becomes necessary, we've got attributes and disciplines. So for firing a phaser is your control attribute combined with your security attribute, which for me is a total of 14. So I'm trying to roll at least one, hopefully two D20s under 14 or at 14.
Yeah, and your success rate is determined by the difficulty of the task.
Yeah.
So the difficulty ranges from 0 to 5. So 0 just means that even if you don't get any successes, you still succeed. Mm-hmm. But any extra grants you momentum, which are basically special action points, basically.
Yep.
So that's a good way. Like I've been doing a lot of low difficulty things at the beginning of our sessions as everyone's getting kind of back used to. It's like, oh, well, you just want to open your tricorder and scan the area. That's a 0 difficulty. You got it. So now you've got some extra momentum that you can spend later if you need to, as we're still kind of sorting things out and everyone's getting used to everything.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing, I've got a compliment for the design of the book itself, and then I have a criticism here. One thing I really love about this book that I'm holding... Mm-hmm. The layout of the pages and the way that everything's designed, it looks like a data pad does on a Star Trek show. It looks like the kind of computer layouts, which is awesome.
Yeah, the Lacar's layout is amazing. It's one of my favorite aesthetic things in all of fiction.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of good art in this book as well. There's great maps of the quadrants. A lot of the stuff featuring tech and ships looks really good. The stuff featuring humans, though, does not look as great to my eye. I will hold this up to the camera. I hope this shows through. There's a picture. This is on page 136. There's a picture of a human security officer holding a Batleth running by a Bajoran science officer. This is not going to show up very well on camera here, but for one thing, the way this guy's holding the Batleth is wrong, and for another thing, I don't know what face that Bajoran is trying to make, but that is not a humanoid face. There's some really... some really bizarre human anatomy things that come up in this book as far as the art goes. This is the minorest of minor nitpicks about me with the design, but you guys know whenever I talk about RPG books, there's always going to be some kind of bugbear that pops up with me either dunking on someone for using stock photos and making it look like a science textbook, or someone's weird art choices.
Yeah, I'd say that's something I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it, but there are definitely some illustrations where I was like, all right. Something that you did mention, as you were talking about a minute ago, is episodes are, the campaigns are laid out like episodes. They're specifically called episodes in the rule book. Mm-hmm. So you're not playing a campaign, you're playing an episode. And they talk about how, like, oh, well, if this is your where you're ending your session, this is the cliffhanger before the episode ends or before a commercial. Yep. They do a lot of stuff like that. They do a lot to really try and make it feel like an episode of Star Trek, which I really appreciate. Mm-hmm. It's something that's very difficult to capture, even in the good video games.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And one other thing to mention about this book, you know, we talked a little bit about kind of the historical Star Trek RPGs and how some of them didn't focus so much on the ship combat. This game does actually try to walk the line of giving you both mechanics for away teams and mechanics for ship combat. That has not popped up in our game yet, but the rules are
there.
I'm
not to it yet.
Yeah.
It's definitely feels a little more complicated than the other stuff. Mm-hmm.
And I honestly have not looked over those specific rules yet. I imagine it's something where you've got everyone kind of working together, having to make separate roles to make sure that their specific functions on the ship end up going off without a hitch.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you've read into it so far, but that seems to be the way that RPGs deal with kind of large ship combat. That's the way they do it in Spaceships and Star Worms, which I talked about a few weeks ago, and it seems to be the way that kind of gets everyone involved in big ship combat.
Yeah, it's it would make sense because that's also how just other ship foreign actions are done, like scanning for life forms or plotting a course. So if they didn't try to implement that in the ship's combat, I would be very surprised.
Absolutely. And one other thing that we should mention, because you guys know me, you know how much I love my miniatures, and you've probably seen what I've been posting on Instagram lately, but Modiphius has done a great job with actually putting out miniatures for this game as well. So you have your official Star Trek miniatures. I've got a couple over here, and Sean has a
right
few
here.
Examples that I actually painted for him.
Yeah. Things lagging behind just a hair. There we go.
Absolutely.
Yep. So these, I love the miniatures. They're great. The biggest, and it's not really a complaint about the miniatures themselves. It's just very much, I almost wish that they were generic.
Yep. Now they do have generic ones. They have like a generic away team as well.
Oh, okay. So you just gave me this one.
Yeah. I did not buy the generic away team. I bought the TNG bridge crew, and then I have some Klingons as well that I kept for myself.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Klingons, of course. Mm-hmm.
But they do have a generic bridge crew. They've got the Klingons are all generic. They do have a specific pack for, I think they call it Greatest Star Trek Villains. But it's basically Khan and Gul Dukat and
Mott the Barber.
I don't remember who all was in it. That's
just a very dumb Star Trek joke. Elfie probably got it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's all that. They have not done like a full, here's a box of Ferengi, here's a box of Cardassians, here's a box of Jem'Hadar.
Yeah.
At some, I do actually think they have a Kaiwen miniature. I now have to check my work there, but I feel like I've seen a Kaiwen miniature. So, let's see. If she is included here.
It would not shock me, because if you're talking great Star Trek villains, you can't not mention Kaiwen.
Mm-hmm. All right, it looks like I might have been mistaken, because what I'm seeing here is you've got a Borg drone, the Borg Queen. I think that's Lore, Khan, Q, Dukat, and then a Gorn.
That would make sense to have the Gorn captain.
And then you also have Christopher Lee's character from Star Trek III, it looks like.
Christopher Lloyd's character.
Yeah, Christopher Lloyd, right.
There's a Borg set, it looks like, where you could just get a bunch of Borg.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few different ones.
Yep.
Oh, the villains are completely out of stock.
Mm-hmm. And then they also have the original series bridge crew as well. And the Romulans.
Oh, basically, it's General Chang.
Yep.
That's what it is, yeah.
They have not done any DS9 minis yet. I imagine they'll probably throw us that bone at some point, since people seem to be loving these minis. So maybe.
Yeah, Star Trek is such a not fickle fan base, but there is a giant gulf between the popularity of the generalized popularity of the original series, Next Gen, and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. And fortunately, DS9 it's become the show that everyone kind of views as the one they overlooked at this point. A lot of people are coming back to it and saying, maybe we were too hard on you, DS9. Maybe you were secretly brilliant. But as far as
it wasn't secretly brilliant, people were just dumb in the 90s.
Yep. But as far as the general population goes, your average people, they know Kirk, they know Picard, they don't know Sisko.
Yeah.
And it's a damn shame, because he's the Sisko.
I've had this discussion a lot lately, because I've been recording some Tribunal episodes about Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine, easily my favorite Star Trek. Like, mm-hmm. It's not even close. It's the one from before the new shows. It's the only one that even feels halfway modern,
mm-hmm.
with the storytelling sensibilities and everything. It's amazing. It's chef's kiss, so good.
Mm-hmm.
I could just gush about that for the whole rest of the time, but yep. I'll refrain.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And yes, as Elfie is saying in the chat here, it is the most kind of rewatchable. And I'm saying this as someone who's only watching it for the first time now, but this is Elfie's... Is this your second or third time through it, Elfie? Because, I mean, there were times, even though I was watching a lot of Next Gen for the first time, mm-hmm. I'd seen... Oh, fifth or sixth. I stand corrected. Even though I was watching a lot of Next Gen for the first time as I was watching it this past time, there were a lot of episodes that just did not, like you said, age well. There's a lot of episodes that feel very yeah. much of their time, or even kind of past, like, older than their time, almost. Like, you look at some of the stuff that was happening in the mid-90s on television, and you compare it to TNG, some of the weaker episodes, and you're like,
yeah,
what are you doing?
For sure, definitely. TNG, the Deep Space Nine is the best, most consistent of all the series. Like, it's the one, because, like I said, my podcast, we generally talk about bad episodes. Not generally, that's exactly what we talk about. That's the whole premise of the show. Mm-hmm. But I'm recording season 2 right now, which is about Deep Space Nine. So season one was TNG, so season two is going to be Deep Space Nine. And the general consensus that I and the guests are coming up with is, if these are the worst episodes that Deep Space Nine has to offer, this show is not that bad. Mm-hmm. But when recording TNG is, if this is the worst episode of TNG, and I were to compare this to the rest of the show, I might think that this is one of the worst TV shows ever made. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not to say that there aren't any good episodes of TNG. There are some absolutely brilliant ones, but... Oh, Elfie. The other shows can run along home. Move along home. They can move along home.
It's time to go to the third chap.
Absolutely. But, I mean, like... There seems to be a pattern of TNG episodes where the first five of the season are typically strong. It dies in the middle, picks up towards kind of mid-season for two or three episodes. There's typically a two-parter in there where things pick up, and then dies off again, and then the last two to four episodes of the season are good again.
Yeah, I would definitely because I have made the argument that there is a stretch of episodes in season three of TNG. It's Sins of the Father, The Offspring, and Yesterday's Enterprise is potentially the best three run episode of a television show ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like all three of those episodes I would put up as best episode of Star Trek. And in the case of either Yesterday's Enterprise or The Offspring, potentially best episode of television, period.
Oh, yeah. Yesterday's Enterprise is one of my absolute favorites of the series. I love that alternate reality. It's a shame about what they did with it later, but... Elfie and I were talking about this the other day. They never did actually resolve... Tasha's alternate reality half-spring daughter.
Oh yeah, Sela. It's it's a shame. It's been a while since it came out and since I was really, really into it. Mm-hmm. I think one of the original intentions for Nemesis was for her to be the villain.
Might have been better than what they did.
Which, for anyone out there listening, the last Star Trek The Next Generation movie, Star Trek Nemesis, go watch yourself a young, fresh-faced Tom Hardy pretend to be Patrick Stewart for 2 hours.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are some interesting cameos of now-famous people in those Star Trek movies. Adam Scott dies
in
2 minutes on the Bridge of the Defiant in First Contact. Neil McDonough is also in First Contact.
Yeah, Neil McDonough is Lieutenant Hawk. Yeah, there's a lot of really good ones. But specifically, the Adam Scott one's great because that was one of my favorite extras in anything ever. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out 20 years later, oh, he's Ben Wyatt on Parks and Rec now.
Yep. Absolutely. So when it comes to kind of the material that Modiphius has released so far, just to supplement the main... book. We mentioned there's a Klingon source book now, so you can be a Klingon player character more easily than you could to begin with.
Yeah.
They've done books for all three main paths within Starfleet, which for those of you who aren't as familiar with Star Trek is Command, Operations, and Science.
Yep. And then there's the Quadrant rule books.
Yep.
Alpha Quadrant, Beta Quadrant. Are there Gamma and Delta Quadrant books yet? I don't think so, because they've not really done much with Voyager or Deep Space Nine, so I'd imagine they're holding on to those for when they start expanding those directions.
Mm-hmm. And then they also have not done anything, and I don't know if this is by design, if they're just not interested. They've not done anything with the Kelvin timeline or with the new series, which I guess those are just, you know, waiting out to see what happens with those. I think the Kelvin timeline is going to end up being something that's just kind of shoved in a closet somewhere and never acknowledged.
Yeah, I would not be surprised by that. just in general, based on some rights things that had happened and have since been resolved. But do they want to continue doing it? Because the shows are apparently pretty successful. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you've got campaign books as well. There's These Are the Voyages and Strange New Worlds. Those are both mission mm-hmm. compendiums. Let's see. You've got Alpha, Beta, Gamma, and Delta are all available.
Okay.
Beta is currently sold out on Modiphius' website, though.
That would make sense, because I think that's where the... If the canon from the 90s holds, that's where the Klingons are from. Mm-hmm. So if people are buying that to support Klingon campaigns and things like that. Something I do like, and we've not mentioned yet, is the game does make concessions and the ability to play in different time periods.
Mm-hmm.
It's specifically set up so you can play in something we've not mentioned yet is the Enterprise time frame, which is about 100 years or so before the original series. You can play in the original series time frame or the Next Generation time frame. The biggest changes are really the available races.
Mm-hmm.
But same thing, if you were to play in those time frames, if you were to play in the Enterprise or original series time frame, you would never need to buy like a Gamma Quadrant or Delta Quadrant book.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, what we've mentioned here, if you were to buy everything, you're looking at hundreds of dollars worth of investment at this point, and it's going to be even more because Modiphius is a British company, so everything, all the prices are listed in pounds sterling. So you're going to end up paying almost $50 per book for some of these books. But it really is... This core book is a complete package. You can absolutely run a fun and complete Star Trek adventure with everything that comes in this book. You don't necessarily need the command source book to, create the best kind of Starfleet captain that you could potentially create.
Right.
There are some cool details. There was recently a Humble Bundle sale on PDFs of a bunch of these expansions, so I have most of the series on PDFs that I got for like $15.
It was 15, got you everything, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
Because I got the same thing. The only things it's missing, I think, are the Gamma Quadrant, the Delta Quadrant, and the new Klingon sourcebook.
Yep, absolutely. And there's some cool stuff in there. If you crack open the Operation Source book, which I immediately did, you can find out how to join Section 31, which...
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. There's a whole thing about joining Section 31 under the security section of that book, which would be an interesting campaign, to say the very least, if someone decided, all right, we're going to do, instead of a traditional bridge crew campaign, you guys are four operatives from Section 31. You're going to be going from ship to ship, mm-hmm. trying to maintain your cover and stuff like that. That would be a damn interesting campaign.
Yeah, I've not spent... I may do something with Section 31 at some point. I've set my campaign is... in between Next Generation and Star Trek Picard.
Yep.
So it is right around the time of Lower Decks, I think, actually. Maybe a couple years after. Mm-hmm. But so I put it there just because I felt like it had the most opportunity. So,
oh, yeah.
But things like Section 31 and things like that are definitely very interesting things. There's it's space. It's this giant 60-year spanning... thing. There's so much that you could do, and I think that's kind of another reason is why I chose to do Star Trek, is it's something that, especially in as long as I've been into it, and especially as much as I was into it in the 90s and the early 2000s, I've forgotten more about Star Trek than most people have probably ever know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a case of why not at least try to put this knowledge to some sort of use.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing that Star Trek has that's beneficial to role-playing that even Star Wars lacks. Because Star Wars, there's been a lot of material that covers the major gaps in the franchise. Mm-hmm. Star Trek, there's been some, but there's still a big... There's big holes where adventures can easily take place. There's big holes between kind of the end of the original series and the animated series and the original series cast movies. There's a decent size hole between kind of that red uniform era and the Next Generation era. And then there's a huge hole after the Voyager returns and after the events of Nemesis that has not been even at all looked at until just recently with Picard.
Yeah, like that's a 20-year gap where there's only one thing that you know for sure happened in there.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Mm-hmm. So even with, you know, hardcore Trek fans, if you've got a whole bunch of people who, like Sean, have forgotten more things than most people remember about the franchise, you can put them in one of those time periods and they might not have a solid idea of what exactly was happening in the Federation and in the Klingon Empire in those periods of time. So that's pretty much your playground. You can do virtually whatever you want there.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, there's so many different places with gaps. Like, do you specifically want to run a campaign that's about a war between the Federation and the Klingons? Then in between the original series movies and Next Gen is perfect because there were conflicts during that entire time. There's the not huge ones, but they were there. Same thing of Federation and the Romulans in between Enterprise and the original series. There was a whole Romulan war during that. There's all these different gaps, and even then, outside of the last three seasons of Deep Space Nine, you could still set things within the confines of what you know already, because Next Gen was literally, other than a couple of events, is like, well, the only thing that's going on that you know about is what was going on here on this ship at this one specific planet.
Yep. Yeah, you could easily do something during the Borg Wars. You could do something in the Dominion War. I'm now thinking of all these different Star Trek campaigns that I want to run now. I would love to do a Klingon campaign during the Dominion War, where you're on one of the birds of prey that's dealing with just the Jem'Hadar and the Breen, kind of at the very end of the war. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, and that's like we said, they just put out the Klingon War book. So if you want to play the non-cerebral, like you want to do the combat campaign, you've got the resources you need to do that. Mm-hmm. You've got your Klingon stats. You've got you just need to make some Jem'Hadar. Do you want it to be a ground war or a space war? You've got the ability to do either one of those.
Yep, absolutely. And honestly, as weird as the mechanics can be initially when you first start playing, this is a good system for it. I'm glad that we have a game like this to explore this world, because there's always a fear with these licensed RPGs that the game is just going to be not great, or there's not going to be a lot of effort put into it because it's a licensed property. It makes money just by having the word Star Trek on it. It's good to see that Modiphius has a team that, you know, cares and wants to put out a good game that emulates Star Trek as well as it does. So if you like Trek and you've got a bunch of friends who like Trek, this is the game for you, and it does come with a buy recommendation from me.
Yeah, and I mean, I bought it to make people play with me, so I also recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And him buying it made me buy it, so there you go. Need to see if Modiphius has some kind of some, now I just lost the term for it, one of those affiliate programs, just for word of mouth.
Yeah, and you've mentioned it, and I just want to say it one more time, is I think the best, most important thing that this game does is it captures the spirit of Star Trek, which is, like you did just mention, it's something that's not very easy to do. Even when there were a lot of Star Trek games coming out, like at the late 90s, early 2000s, even the good ones, your Star Trek Armadas, your Klingon Honor Guards, your Voyager Elite Forces, those were good games. They were all good games, but they were all very action-oriented. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's two first-person shooters in an RTS.
Yeah.
RTS is close-ish, but not really. But this, you know, gives you the opportunity to sit down and really, like, do something that feels like Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Cool. Well, Sean, we are kind of at the end of our time here. Basically, right now, anything you want to promote? Obviously, you've got Star Trek Tribunal. At some point, we're actually going to end up doing an episode for that. So anyone who just likes to hear me talk, I can't imagine there's many of you out there. At some point, I'll be doing that. So we'll keep you posted on that. But is there anything else you want to promote? Anything coming up?
Nothing in the immediate future. Like you did just mention, there's Star Trek Tribunal, which is the Star Trek podcast. I started to talk about bad episodes of Star Trek with my friends. The most recent episode is actually on the first season of Star Trek Picard. I've had several guests on there, a couple of published authors, a couple of Emmy nominated producers, things like that. Losing my train of thought. Where'd it go? So that, in the process of recording season two of that right now, I see that my Twitter handle is on the screen for Twitch. But if you're just listening, it's at Sean Trek. That's S-H-A-U-N Trek for Twitter. That's actually also my Twitch handle. I don't do a lot of stuff on Twitch. I'm probably going to start doing it again. I was actually running through Star Trek games on Twitch for a while.
Nice.
I played Star Trek Deep Space Nine Crossroads of Time, Star Trek Starfleet Academy, a few things like that. So I just really need to get off my ass and do it again. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned up front, my girlfriend actually has an Etsy shop that she's going to be opening soon. It is not open yet. It is not available. But if you saw the Le Chat sticker, keep your eye out for Snakes and Stones on Etsy. I don't know when that will be going live, but it should be soon, hopefully.
Gotcha. All right, guys. Well, that is going to do it for today's episode. Sean, thank you once again for coming on. This has been a blast. I've had a great time talking with you about this great game that we've shared the table to play together. Just to let you guys know what's coming up this week, of course, this Saturday morning on Danishes and Dragons, we're doing another character creation stream. I am going to be rebuilding my forever NPC, Cromwell McGwen, using some of the resources that I did not have my hands on when I first built him, namely Xanathar's Guide to Everything. So we'll be doing that, and in honor of Cromwell McGwen, we will be having an Irish breakfast. So I'll be holding forth on corned beef hash and how much I love it. Irish coffee, of course, will be consumed. So there will be that. And then next Monday, Labor Day, we are going to be talking to Jackie Zanto of Crawler once again. She is working feverishly on Crawler 2.0, adding more features to the application that allows you to connect with people and form your RPG groups. I'm excited to hear how this project is progressing. It's an idea that obviously kind of blew up beyond what she was expecting when she created it as a grad project. So we'll be talking a lot about that and what's coming with that application. That'll be next Monday. So until then, guys, whether you rolled a 1 or a 20, I'm so glad that you rolled your bones with me, Ryan Howard, and I'll see you next time.